Hello?
If you can hear this, it's not too late. I return to warn you. This is Time Pop, a podcast that discusses time travel and pop culture. There are spoilers. I've seen the future, and nothing is sacred to these folks. Your past, present, and future are sure to be ruined. Even if you could go back in time, as I have, you will never forget what you are about to hear. You've been warned. This is Time Pop.
Your mom's a chrononaut.
Welcome, Chrononauts, as we guide you through the experience of time travel using pop culture as our Murphy's Law. We will be your constants. I am Dez.
And I'm Ari.
And this is
Time Pop.
And that is
Scott in the house.
Yes, he is. Let's not worry about him, Ari.
I never worry about Scott.
This is our show. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm very excited about this movie. I love it.
Have you seen this one a lot?
Twice.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've seen it three times.
Whoa.
I'm correcting her. I know a lot about her.
I've seen it three times?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen it three times.
She's seen it three times.
So Scott's only seen it twice because watched the movie twice and he's watched you watch it the third time.
Different
podcast.
This movie came out in 2014?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
I did some research.
Calm down, Scott.
This is kind of a great film.
This is.
I mean, so, this is up there for me.
I feel like I've seen this more than, I didn't feel like I saw this movie a lot.
It's not an easy movie. This isn't like watching The Breakfast Club. It's not an easy movie to watch. It's thick, thick and good.
So I think I saw it in the theater and then I think I watched it. I think this is one of those movies that Kelly watched alone later. And then a lot of times she has to watch it with someone. Like if she watches a movie alone, she's just like, I can't digest this until there's another human being.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I feel like, and again, well, we'll get into that, how much, even though I've been in the presence of this movie probably a half dozen times, I realized last night, other than sitting in the movie theater, I haven't watched this movie. It's hard to take it all in. I feel like I noticed a lot last night. Just little things, not major scientific things, but.
Well, thank you guys for having me. This film belongs in the Smithsonian or what? This is a great film. For sci-fi, for space. I mean, Ari's the expert. I'll let her talk to that. For me personally, just on time travel and all those things, this movie kills it in the pants.
This is so, so good. And this is, I love it when, oftentimes we're like, hey, Scott, do you want to be on this? But I love it when they're like, oh, we're watching Interstellar. And Scott's like, I'll be there. Yeah,
some films I demand. It's not really up to them.
You're like, you can either set up a mic for me or I can just shout from the corner. It's your call.
You're not doing this without me. I'm sorry. Not a choice.
I always know it's going to be a great episode and he's going to have plenty to share. So let's get past this boring stuff so we can get into some fun stuff. Not really boring, actually. Just some facts, some things that we can't dispute. This movie is called Interstellar. It was released November 7th, 2014, at a length of 169 minutes. It is rated PG-13. I found the F-bomb in this movie, by the way.
Only one?
Well, it's PG-13. That's all you get.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't know
that? That's a fact?
You get a yeah.
You get one F-bomb?
You get one free F-bomb.
If you say two, then it's R?
Yep.
Interesting.
What about S-bombs?
I don't know how many you get. I think you get a couple, though.
More than Fs.
And I think I don't think you can refer to duty. It has to be, you're a little.
We're keeping the podcast PG rating
If I take a
Oh, PG-13.
I'll add it. I'll edit this
down. If you show your boobs, we're going straight to R.
I'm going to edit this down to a nice Disney G. But yeah, it's, I think when he's yelling at Matt Damon, I think he calls him a effing coward.
Oh.
That's his, so they used it wisely. Directed by Christopher Nolan, written by Chris and John Nolan. They make a wonderful team. They wrote Memento and a lot together. John helps Chris write a lot. Starring Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway. Have you guys, I'm just going to jump right into the deep water. Have you guys watched Serenity? Have you watched the other McConaughey Hathaway vehicle? Oh.
You're not talking about Firefly Serenity?
No.
Oh, no, I have not.
A movie I've heard a lot about. It's going around the podcast circuit because it's friggin' crazy. I watched it on vacation and it is, the fact that it doesn't make the Rotten Popcorn list is insane. It's one of those movies that I'm surprised one group doesn't like more. It's one of those movies where they took a big, big swing. And two things happen when you take a big swing. You hit a home run or you strike out. And they whiffed.
Wait, it's McConaughey and
Hathaway.
And Hathaway again?
Yeah. I'm not going to say anything about it because you especially, Scott, have to watch it.
Is it science fiction?
Yeah. It's science metaphysical.
Okay.
If Serenity is what it's called?
Yeah.
Science metaphysical.
Yeah, and it is. It's one of those movies where like the idea of it is like, wow, this could be really interesting. Yeah. And then it's...
Okay.
Like, it's a great plane movie. I highly recommend it. It was the best plane movie I've seen in a long time. So I digress. And we've got Jessica Chastain and Ellen Burstyn playing Murph. And Ellen Burstyn is old Murph. She starred in a wonderful old television show called The Time Tunnel, which is a great 60s time travel TV show that I've watched a couple episodes of just to check it out. And it's kind of interesting. You know, it's 60s stuff. It's every episode's basically a period piece, but they try. John Lithgow as Donald, doing some research here. You know, obviously he's got a massive IMDb page. John Lithgow's first movie ever, Dealing, or the Berkeley to Boston 40 Brick Lost Bag Blues.
Wait, repeat what?
That's the name of John Lithgow's first movie. Let me say that again. Dealing, or the Berkeley to Boston 40 Brick Lost Bag Blues from 1972. Okay.
That's the whole title of the movie, that whole thing?
Wow. Yeah. Yes, it is. Bill Irwin as the voice of Tars, which I had. Do you know him?
Yeah.
Like, I love Tars so much, I had to write down his name, but it didn't. He's got a lot of credits, but yeah. Do you know him for anything specific, or you just know that?
Yeah, if it's the Bill Irwin I think of, didn't he also do like a lot of clowning and stuff?
Probably.
Wasn't he in?
Did you say clowning?
Yeah, wasn't he in Sesame Street?
Don't say that like it's a real thing. You look that up.
Yes,
really.
He's in Sesame Street. Yes.
Oh, Bill Irwin, you're awesome.
He's also in Legion. He's the guy that they split into two people.
Oh yeah.
But he's one of the major clowns in Sesame Street. Okay, we're going on a tangent.
I love it. Let's have some fun.
You're welcome.
Michael Caine as Professor Brain. And Topher Grace, which I forgot he was totally in this movie. I spent a lot of this watch trying to figure out when he was going to pop up. And he finally does there towards the end. And Matt Damon, who just kind of looking up all this stuff, I found it interesting. What I found an interesting piece of trivia. He has played Loki in two movies. Scott, do you know what two movies Matt Damon played Loki in?
Is it a Kevin Smith movie?
That's one of them.
Is it Dogma then? Or
that's one.
Dogma. I'm gonna get this.
The second one is a lot more obvious.
Was he Loki in Avengers movie?
Yes.
Oh, that's right. I did know this. I read this. I couldn't. And Ben Affleck was in it or something too, or somewhat.
That's the Dogma one. But he was when in Ragnarok when they're doing the theatrical version of the stories. Matt Damon is the thespian on
stage. That's a fun fact.
Playing Loki. I just watched Dogma the other day with Will, and it was awesome. Like, I know better. Like, if I'm like, oh my god, Will, you got to sit down and watch this. You're gonna love it. Like, it's not gonna fit. But he was just kind of near it, and so I just put it on. And he just slowly moved closer and ended up laughing a lot at Dogma. So that was a lot of fun. Rotten Tomatoes. Critics gave it a 72. Audience gave it an 85. And I think my fun facts are all science-based. So I will save those.
I would think they'd give higher than 72.
Yeah, I think it's one of those movies that the people that don't find it believable enough really enjoy tearing this movie down to make sure that the rest of us don't believe it's not 1,000% fact. Like, you know, all you people just think this is so possible, but this wouldn't work and this wouldn't work. And, you know, I tried to watch a YouTube video just because I wanted to get another take and kind of because people do love this movie a lot. And it was just one of those guys that just destroys every plot hole. And, you know, it's like you got to suspend some disbelief for any Hollywood movie in order to move the plot forward. So I didn't even really get to his main scientific gripes because he couldn't get past basic script writing. So,
wow.
Those are my facts. We're going to hand this over to Overy for Arvery's overview.
Wow. Did you say ovaries for Arvery's?
I did.
Arvery.
Well, I just got my over and e. overview and Ari all mixed ovary. Up. I'm going to send. And now, Ari's overview.
Dun, da, da, da. All right. So this movie, I want to go through it step by step just because I love it so much. But I feel like that would take 3 hours in and itself, which is how long the movie kind of is.
169 minutes, Ari.
Yeah. So I don't think we should go through it step by step.
No, I think that would be...
we're just going to assume that everyone listening to this has seen this amazing movie.
Now, would you like to do a quick synopsis and Scott and I will shut our mouth? Or should we just start talking? Should we just all do a nice long overview and digress as necessary?
I'm going to try to do a quick synopsis. If I leave anything important out, definitely jump in, guys.
Okay.
So this movie takes place, I'm assuming, in 2014. They don't ever really say the date, or do they?
Keep talking. That was the one reason I wanted to keep this fandom article close by, as they actually do.
They do mention
they're suggesting it's down the road.
Yeah, but they don't say an actual date.
Yeah, I thought they kept it pretty vague.
They kept it pretty vague. I mean, I know at one point they talk about, you know, the 6 million people on the Earth, which is funny because this was made in 2014 or 2013. I guess it was made and released in 2014. I guess then there were 6 million people. Here now in the early 2020, there are 7.5 billion people. So
maybe people died out because of their famine thing.
Only 1.5 billion people died out.
So
at the beginning, yeah.
I'm not going to dispute this right now. We're just going to assume this is fact and someone has done enough work. So Cooper was born in 2031 or 2032, this timeline from fandom.
They mentioned it.
I don't think they mentioned it. I mean, people maybe did.
This is all, someone did all the math. Like, I think at some point, there's a point or two where you can figure out this. You're like, okay, well, if that's that, then he's 35 minus 35.
In the end, they reference a specific year, don't they?
I think
so. And then they just backtrack from there.
So the film opens in 2067. That's what it's proposing.
2067?
Yeah.
Okay. So in 2067, they mentioned there were 6 billion people.
6 million, right? Or 6 billion died.
Oh, now I don't know.
Because in reality, there's 7 billion. So I would assume if most of the people died off, then that would leave.
I don't think they were talking about people
dying. I
think
she's right. I think they were saying 6 billion
alive. They said 6 billion people.
There were. There's not anymore.
Okay.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I just remember I wrote that down and put haha next to it because... there are 7.5 billion people now, and so
too many people,
lots of people. Okay.
We could use a blight.
So this takes place in the future where the earth is dying. Crops, nothing is growing, crops are becoming extinct. There's a lot of fires, there's a lot of dust, and people are having to survive. And one thing I will point out, because I thought it was interesting that they wrote that, or they put that in the movie, that people are no longer teaching science in school. And
well, they are. It's just they don't let anybody go into it. Like, you have to show an aptitude for it.
No, the teacher that he had the parent-teacher conference with was like, oh, yeah, and they faked the moon landing or some major scientific thing.
But they talk about Murph showing promise. I mean, I know that they shut his son down, just like, no, this
guy's... They want to teach science, but they specifically want to teach like applicable earth science and how they could save the earth. They don't want anyone thinking about the stars, or maybe they're maybe hinting that there was some...
I guess you're right. It's engineering. They teach engineering, but not... I think you're right. Now that I think about it, I think you are right. But like, science beyond our planet.
There was some point where the teacher was like, well, that was made up, and she was talking about the earth landing or the moon landing.
Yeah, that was interesting. That's a fact I don't remember picking up on before this watch.
Yeah,
that this movie proposes. But I think they throw it in almost like maybe they're lying just to shut people up. Like, let's just say we faked it.
Well,
I didn't get that sense at
all. Obviously, he was groomed to be an astronaut and then never made it out. So something went down either through like nuclear war or space travel or something that maybe has to do with why the Earth is in bad shape.
Well, no, he was, I mean, he was actually, I think, an astronaut, just that the resource wars kicked in at a right. time when it was like, where we may have started sending him up into space more. It was like, that's just not
going to happen.
What we're doing right now.
Right. And then people had to become farmers out of necessity.
I think the most science fiction part about this movie is the fact that nobody's fighting for resources. Unfortunately, I think if this reality hit, I think that there would be more wars than ever trying to get what corn is left on this earth instead of the entire planet dissolving all of its military into farmers.
That's true.
But anyways.
So our main characters are, they live on a farm and they are farmers for corn. And Matthew McConaughey's character used to be in the military and he had an accident and could not fly anymore and became a farmer. And the... he has a son and a daughter. The daughter's name is Murphy, named after Murphy's Law. And I made a note that that is probably the worst possible name that you could give a child. And, you know, they address it in the movie. She's like, why did you name me after something bad? And she's like, it's not bad. Murphy's Law means that anything can happen. But everybody knows of Murphy's Law has a negative association, you know. It's like, yeah. Oh, Murphy's Law whenever something goes bad.
That's true. Yeah, because I kind of liked it, but now that you mention it, yeah, because you'd have to explain to everybody you meet, like, no, actually
it's not just a bad thing.
Yeah,
it's when anything can... yeah, anyway, so that's a terrible name for
Murph. Murph.
So essentially the world is almost like a post-apocalyptic world, you know. People are dying and there's dust storms all the time. And Murph, the daughter, claims that there's a ghost in her room because books are falling off the shelves and she can just sense it. And of course, you know, Matthew McConaughey is like, there's no such things as ghosts because he's a scientist and everything can be proven with science. Yay, science.
Science.
So let's see here. There's a dust storm one day and they noticed in the dust settling in Murphy's room that the dust settled in a very specific pattern. And Matthew McConaughey's character, what's his name in the movie?
Cooper.
Cooper, of course, Cooper.
Coop.
He throws a quarter on the dust and there's like, you know, it sticks. And he says, oh, it's gravity. And from the shapes the dust were making, they were in like lines. He discovered that it was binary and he wrote it out and it was coordinates to on a map to NASA. So he and Murph drive there. And what do they discover? They discover NASA, which had been thought to have been disbanded, but they yeah. have been operating secretly. And they come across some scientists who I guess Cooper knew one of them.
It he was knew
his professor.
He was a professor, yeah.
Yeah. They were all aware of who he was.
Yeah.
Because I just read something. I think he was actually hurt in that crash. I don't think it was so much that NASA got disbanded. I think he was decommissioned after the crash.
I think they're supposed to be underground. Like, people don't know about.
After that, they did.
Yeah.
But he wasn't just part of the like, we don't have money for this. I think he was put aside before that because of an injury from the crash. So, and this happens really fast. This scene, like, goes from like, where the hell are we to
we're NASA
and you're piloting.
Yeah.
This mission.
Well, you're NASA. The Earth is dying. People have no chance on this Earth. So we got to find another Earth. We have been doing experiments in order to find another Earth. In fact, we sent out 12 astronauts in 12 different spaceships to go through this black hole / wormhole that we found in order to find these planets, because we looked through the wormhole and saw that there are these planets there, and then the astronauts are all going to go to these planets and then send back word to tell us if the planets are habitable or not. And it turns out that 3 of them are. Oh, and by the way, Cooper, you're going to be the pilot who goes to these 3 planets. Yeah, that scene happens in like 2 minutes.
Yeah,
the explanation is like, and this is what's happening,
which, yeah, the first half of the movie just driving around cornfields and going to baseball games.
Yeah, and but seeing the NASA how bad scene
takes 4 minutes.
Yeah, well, isn't it's that 40, always the case?
Yeah, it's this movie has a 40-minute setup before he gets into space.
Well, and I realized today, I think it's mostly to set up the relationship between Coop and Murph.
Yeah, no, there's a lot that it's setting up. It sets up, yeah.
That sets up the ghost, you know, the...
Yeah.
The...
Which is
the state of the
Coop
world.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, it all comes full circle. It's all important.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's also the case that I find with a lot of science fiction movies, time travel movies. You know, maybe the science isn't actually real. Most of the time it's not. So they just kind of breeze by it really quick.
It's science.
It makes it seem more legitimate when they just talk really fast.
Yeah, that's true.
So
don't worry about it. We got it.
Yeah. So they convince Cooper that he has to go do this. You know, he may be gone however many years, but he's got to do this in order to save the planet. And, you know, the professor guy is like, see this building that we are in right now? This is essentially a space station. I'm building the space station. And plan A, which they always talk about, is launching this space station into outer space. So for those who don't know, space stations are built in space. Space station. So there's going to be the first issue that I have.
Well, no, because the whole problem they're trying to solve on the ground is gravity.
Right. So the reason why in the real world space stations are built in space is because they're designed to live in. They're not designed to pierce through the Earth's atmosphere and to blast away from gravity, which is, you know, a rocket design as opposed to like a circular spinning around
thing.
Design. Right. So they built this space station on Earth and Professor Smarty Pants is trying to figure out, you know, the mathematical equation of how they're going to get this thing into space, and they can't figure it out. Right. But he's going to work on that while Cooper goes off and explores these potentially habitable three planets with his very small crew of like three other people.
Yeah.
One of them being Anne Hathaway, with her amazing haircut.
Does she have quotes over the word amazing?
Air quotes.
With her amazing haircut.
I always like her. I know she's a, yeah.
No, I think she's amazing. I love Anne Hathaway.
Awesome.
I very much like her as an actress.
Pro Anne.
Yeah, very, very much. I mean, her haircut was, you know, as an astronaut, you have to have short hair.
Practical.
I know if you look on the space station now, there is a woman who has long hair and has been in the past. So that statement doesn't really make sense.
Science fiction.
But so in order for this, so I like this stuff in the movie, so I'm going to go over it. I'm not going to leave it out of my overview. So first they have to get to Saturn, which is the best planet of them all.
Oh. Yes.
I don't know if you guys knew that.
I agree.
So in order to get there, it takes 2 years and they have to go into hypersleep. So they have a hypersleep,
nice little nap
system, and they get there after 2 years, and the perfect, I don't know what you would call it. There just so happens to be a beautiful wormhole just outside of Saturn that they know was placed there by something or someone.
By they.
Them. They, them.
Yes.
They put it there, them, how the humans know that they put this wormhole there. They never explain that. They never explain first contact with them or if there just happens to be a wormhole.
Well, they just, it just appeared. They know that it just appeared one day.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that the other side of it is within shot of seven possibly habitable planets. So it seems like a very purposeful
right. And they also thing. They're linking that with the binary that they received at that time, and you know that they've gotten some signals from it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
They've gotten some other signals.
Signals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wrote down in my notes, I wrote BH and WH for each section of my notes. So black hole and wormhole.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So because I know that they kind of breeze over a lot of the science stuff. And maybe you can remember this, Des or Scott. The thing that is by Saturn is a wormhole.
Yes.
Okay. And then they also experience a black hole, which is completely different.
Which is on the other side, not on the Saturn side of the wormhole.
Right.
Right.
The black hole is on.
So wormhole and black hole, two very different things.
Yes.
Okay. So, and they do the cliche explanation of a wormhole where yeah. they're like, if you took space-time and made it into a straight line, you're just taking this end and this end and putting them together. And he pokes the pencil through.
Folds
and
the paper
like,
in half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and one guy was like, why is it a circle? But one guy was like,
yeah.
you know.
Oh, yeah. He says it's
like, weird. Well, because, you know, if it were in three dimensions, if it were in two dimensions, it's a circle. But if you make that into three dimensions, it's a sphere.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't
sure.
know. I guess to me, it's obvious that it would be a sphere, but I guess to some people it's not, so they have to explain that to them.
Why would it be obvious? I mean, it makes sense that it's a sphere, but tell me why it's obvious.
But people don't think about that.
Because,
you know?
Because it's three-dimensional. Literally what they just explained in the... So you would think that it would be just a circle, like a circle with a tube coming out the other end?
I don't...
Some people don't take that much time to think about black holes.
So this is a wormhole. This is not
yeah.
a black hole.
Other wormhole, yeah.
I mean, similar concept, very different though. So, but similar shape, right?
Oh, you're right. So, because a flat would be a Stargate.
Yes, yes. No, that's a very good way of thinking about yeah. it. Yes, a flat would be a Stargate. So that's in two dimensions, essentially.
Yes.
But take that and make it three dimensions.
That helps me. The fact that I can imagine a two-dimensional one.
Yeah.
Now it makes more sense why yeah. this one is three-dimensional.
So it's three-dimensional, yeah. but still you're able to enter it and exit it.
Now, I think I understand this too, but explain to me how they talk about the periscope, because they talk about how they can see through the black hole and peer around.
Okay, black hole or wormhole?
The wormhole, right? They sent the probe through.
But they talk about how they can see because they can see through the wormhole.
So if it isn't, okay, so I am not an expert on anything. But I just very much
you
like
play science. One on this podcast.
Yes, I just play one on podcast. So what they're saying is because it is a think of it as a tube, even though there's a sphere on one end and a sphere on the other end. Think of it as a tube. They were able to see through it. I guess they were able to send something through it and receive messages back through it. It's a stretch, right? You
okay.
know, this is a stable tube through space.
Yes.
So, you know, if they were able to take space
oh,
and
yes,
do
yes,
this,
yes, yes.
and then it was stayed that way.
Yeah.
They could just send
well, there's something they talk about a periscoping effect
yeah.
of how they see through the wormhole.
They said they had limited data. Once they went through, they got a lot more.
Well, it's not
data.
That. I think it's where they're actually looking through it when they're
right.
physically floating towards it, the way they can see through it.
Hmm.
You mean when she like reached her hand out and was like
no,
all distorted?
No, when they're actually floating towards it at one point when he's like, could you stop spinning? And he's like, why? He's like, because we can see it now.
Yeah.
And they stop spinning and then they slowly. And then, of course, they can't go directly through it. Like you kind of got to, you know, because it's, you know.
Yeah, you run along the side of it.
Yeah.
Until you cross over the
But at
horizon.
Some point, Coop says something about like, why can we see? Or like, they say like swing around so we can. I don't know. I
see it differently.
I know they said something about a periscope. It's like, well, just and it's not about how they go through it or how they send messages. It's about how they actually in real time see through it.
Yeah.
And they explain it somehow through like, oh, like a periscope. So
yeah. I must have missed
that.
That's
the answer.
Yeah.
Like a periscope.
So they go through the wormhole that
yes.
somebody put there, a stable wormhole
they
that they put there. And they come out the other end and in this part of the galaxy that they are in, there is a giant massive black hole.
Gargantua.
And somewhat near it, three different planets that they have gotten pings back from the astronauts that went there, meaning that there potentially could be a planet they could live on. So they decide to go to the first planet. I believe it's just the closest planet to when they get through the wormhole, and they call that one Miller's planet. And this scene, man, I
yeah.
love this scene.
So good.
So intense.
So intense. So they do a great job. This planet is the closest to Gargantua, the black hole, out of all three planets. And they, you know, they got to explain, well, if we go down to this planet, we're going to lose time. Or we're going to not lose time, but time will be altered.
We're going to experience it differently.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is an actual scientific thing. And they figure out, okay, we got to get down there and get back because every hour that we're down there is 7 years.
And they figure out a way, yeah, to park the ship in space to lose less time while they quickly drop down, check it out, and get back.
So the spaceship that they parked just outside of, you know, essentially the the pole of the black hole is still in Earth time. And then they take the lander, cross that threshold onto the planet where their time is now different.
Where 1 hour equals 7 years.
7 years, yeah. Right.
And I understand this is science fact. I can wrap my head around a DeLorean sending me back to 1955 more than I can wrap my head around going to another planet for an hour and coming back and everyone else around me is 7 years old. I can't.
I mean, this makes this film the most realistic time travel film ever.
So gravity, we're going to take a huge.
Gravity affects time.
We're talking.
Gravity is time.
Do you want me to try to explain it to you?
I do.
Okay.
I wasn't even going to ask, but if you can, okay, please tell me.
The way that I have seen it, heard it, read it is, so black hole, right? So space-time is like a 3D grid.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So black hole takes, like pinch, you're in this big grid, pinch any part of the grid and pull it straight.
Yeah.
That's how we show.
Pull it straight down into infinity.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I almost want to draw you a picture. So you've got.
I'm so mad that I don't have my whiteboard. I packed everything and I forgot my brand new whiteboard. I'm so mad.
Okay. So think of. Okay.
I can see the picture because I've definitely seen pictures of that.
Of that. Think about it as a cube, right? Space is a cube and there's grid lines all throughout the cube making smaller cubes. Okay. So you pinch in the middle of that and you pull straight down. All those cubes that were right around the area that you pinched and pulled, they got stretched.
Yes.
Because those lines are still there. They got stretched. So the distance from...
So now instead of a 1-inch by 1-inch cube, it's a 1-inch by...
By, depending on where you are in the event horizon. So exactly. So the cubes that are closer to the part where you pinched and pulled straight down are really stretched out.
Yeah.
And light to go from one side of that small cube to the other side of that small cube has to go really far and will take a lot longer. As opposed to a cube way out here, which light just goes boop and it gets from one side to the other side. So it's quicker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here, light has to go a lot longer.
See, that makes sense. That all makes sense for light and space.
But not for time.
But not for time.
So, okay, how do I explain?
And I know that the astronauts do it all the time. I know when astronauts go to the moon and come back, that everyone on Earth has aged 2 seconds more than they have.
Yeah, I think it's less than that. It's like a millisecond.
But like...
How do I explain time in real... Okay, so...
This, we might just need to do a whole podcast on this.
I'm not an expert by any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So...
I just don't understand how... I guess I'm still... So if they're actually on the planet, if they never...
Here, I'm going to break it down.
Hold on.
Okay.
Real quick. I'll let you...
Handle it.
Come with the facts in a second. I want to just throw out another false accusation before we get to the truth. So when they're... on the planet there, if they never come in contact with Earth people again, time will still be relatively the same. They will age at the same rate. It's not until they reconnect with an Earthling that they realize that everything's different.
Correct.
Yes.
Relativity.
So yes.
So here's a quick definition. I've been looking up a lot of stuff regardless, and this is based on to Einstein's theory of special relativity.
Space-time.
Says time slows down or speeds up depending on how fast you move relative to something else. Approaching the speed of light, a person inside a spaceship would age much slower than his twin at home. Also, under Einstein's theory of general relativity, gravity can bend time.
But they wouldn't age. They only age slower by, like, if you're going through light speed, you don't live 500 years.
No, yeah, you
still die.
It's from your
80.
Perspective,
you still,
your experience.
Like if you just go into light speed and you never get out of light speed and you never leave that ship, you still die at 80.
Yes.
It's not until you come back to Earth and you realize that you're living with your great 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 great
yes.
grandchildren.
Yes. Yes.
That
your own experience of time. So it is relative. But
I'm going to accept what you guys said.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff.
But it's weird that
I've been doing this podcast for 30 episodes and we're just getting into
it. This is the most meaty explanation of it, and it's real. And the fact that, like, again, there's some stretches, but that theoretically this paradox where you could be younger than your child.
But it's actually
happen.
It's not a paradox. So a paradox is something that's not real or couldn't actually happen. This is
right.
The only way you could actually time travel.
Yeah.
Right.
is going into the future by going near a gravity well, a black hole, staying there for a long period of time and coming back, and you will have been in however many years into the future. This is like they have proven it.
So weird.
So gravity.
Someday someone's going to do that. Like, well, no, I guess light speed. That's a different thing. But
so there's also the.
Like, if you get near light speed, is it even close? Like, do you have to hit light speed for this to really take effect? Or if you're like,
if you're just a few under.
Yeah. If you're like 0.75 light speed.
So
could you meet your great?
It says to go faster than light in a vacuum specifically.
So the theory is, if
I got
you,
a Eureka.
The theory is if you can travel at the speed of light, time stands still.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So
you have to be going faster for this to really. Oh, no. Okay, I see what you're saying.
You need to have infinite mass and a length of zero.
Oh, so you're at the pinch point.
Yeah.
You've got to be at. So that's why the answer to this movie is at the center of the black hole.
Right. So
that's why the math is at that pinch point.
So for our listeners later on in this movie.
This could be a long podcast.
Oh,
it's
God.
Great. Fucking great. This might be 169 minutes.
Yeah. So
and it's going to be worth every second.
Yeah, but that's relative for hundreds for us. For them, it's just going to be a 30-second podcast.
Well, that's because they're going to hit times two on their podcast.
It's all
player.
Relative, but it's all the same information, just done in less time. Yes.
So at some point later on in the movie, Cooper's daughter, she becomes, I know we're skipping ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, finish your thought, sorry.
So Desmond just talked about, you know, the point of a black hole, you know, the pinpoint where gravity is, you know, an atom thick or whatever.
Where
you know.
Everything and nothing exists all at the same time.
So just before that point is something called the event horizon, which theoretically you would never be able to see because that's the point in which light can't escape. So gravity is so intense that light can't get out and time stops. So the equation that is required for their space station, which is on Earth, to get into space requires knowing the math that is over that event horizon, right? So math is the universal language, the language of the universe. And so for order for them to get the space station off of Earth and into space, they need to know what is happening over that event horizon. Okay.
How do we get that information?
Yes. So in this movie, the way that they do that is...
So real quick, let's finish. So they go down to the planet.
Oh, yeah. We skipped over a bunch of stuff.
Things go wrong. Uh-huh. The person who they
thought...
It's
a water-filled planet.
The doctor that's supposed to be there is not there. Well, her equipment is. And it ends up taking them 2-3 hours to get off the planet, we'll just say.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, how the hell was she sending back? How are we getting these pings from her? And it's like, well, because she's only been here for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But for us, it's been all these years. So she sent a couple of pings back.
Yeah. At one point she says she must have just died moments ago.
Ugh. Yeah. She's been here for 45 minutes.
Love
and
it.
Probably just died.
Just crazy. Died moments ago.
So then they go back to their ship where the guy they left on there has aged
23 years.
Yeah.
Have they come? Yeah. How long has it been? 23 years since they left.
3 hours.
And he was kind of studying the black hole, right?
So yeah, in that time he studied the black hole. He got some new information, some new calculations. And they realize they don't have enough fuel to go to the two remaining planets and to get back home. So they have to decide which planet they're going to go to. And then there's the scene, which is very controversial in this movie. And I remember the first time I saw this movie, I don't know, you know, just it's where I was in life when I saw it in 2014. But it's the scene where Anne Hathaway's character is talking about the man that is on one of these planets she loves, you know, and she's like, I haven't seen him in a decade, but I love him and something is drawing me to there. And that has to count for something. And she talks about love. And, you know, this most recent time that I saw it, I think it's because I know what happens. But I was just like, yeah, love.
Now or the first time?
This not the first time. I remember the first time.
You were like, I was
science.
Like,
science.
Yeah, I was like, really? Come on, love, mm-hmm. whatever, you know. And I feel like a lot of people I talked to had that same reaction. But this most recent time, I was like, yeah, man, love. Love is the answer. Love is the unknowing thing that you cannot quantify and you can't explain in science. And you should have listened to her. And
yeah, I'm going to take this time to do a shameless plug for All the Answers. Everyone out there, coming soon from Sounds Awesome is a wonderful podcast called All the Answers. And it might not answer everything, but love definitely contributes.
This episode is sponsored by love.
Love.
But it was...
I get their concern. You know, this movie is very science-based.
Yeah.
And then in that, you have this monologue of her saying, "Why this trip with the fate of humanity, why not be about this guy that I boned once that I got some feelings for?" You know, and that's... You could see people be like,
But it was...
But it is, I think,
but no, it ends up tying into their whole... This movie that is also science-based, that whole monologue she does is kind of... I was saying to Ari, it's kind of the anchor of the entire film. It's like what they're really saying the whole film is about.
Yeah, because later on, you know, Murph, as a kid and as an adult, just had this feeling, this feeling in that room that she was drawn to. And
their bond saves the universe, essentially.
Yeah, they're...
And I think what's hard, I think the word love turns people off
a
lot.
The actual word, yeah.
Yeah, and I think most people can accept that there is something connecting us as human beings, you know, that is stronger than words and physical touch and all that stuff. And I think people just gag on the word love sometimes, but it is. I mean, I definitely believe there's something that science cannot answer.
Well, yeah, you know, in that monologue, Cooper was like, yeah, love, it's important to, you know, procreate and to care for your community and things like that. And she's like, yeah, but why do we love people who are dead then? Why do we, you know,
where's the utility in that?
Cooper, you know, had no response to that. And you know, looking back on it, yeah, everything happened for a reason and it all worked out in the end. But in that moment, they should have listened to her because she was right. That planet was the right planet.
And they do it well, too. Like, they really, because they're going to vote for it. And then he basically says, you're only voting for love and we're going to go on science. And then at the end, they don't even really vote on it.
They don't even vote. She just walks out and like, yep.
Yep. Science.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So then they don't go to the planet she wants to go to. They go to another planet where we now get to meet Matt Damon's character.
It's a cold planet. It's a little bit snowy and icy.
Yeah. And it turns out that Matt Damon's character, who was the first scientist to volunteer to go on this potentially suicide mission to these 12 planets.
He was the best of all of us.
He was the best of all of us, which is really interesting because they say that more than twice. He was the best of us. He inspired all the 12 people to go and he was the best of us. And then it turns out that he was a coward and got to this planet and immediately knew that it was not habitable. But then he lied and fudged the information and sent back his ping in hopes that he would be rescued, which is not what that mission was about.
To quote the movie, fucking coward.
PG-13. Boom.
That's our one. We're PG-13 too. That's my one F-bomb for this podcast.
You're actually going to leave it in?
We'll see.
You could bleep it.
I don't know.
Get that PG back.
Wow.
I'm okay being PG-13.
Wow. We're getting raw, folks. But.
So let's see. So on the water planet, they lose one of the crew members. On the ice planet, they lose another crew member.
Is it the guy that ages? I forget.
Yeah.
The
guy
that ends up scientist.
He got blowed up.
I know, but.
So he faked the data, right? So he had to take out the android who can't lie about the data. And he kind of set like a bomb in there. That data be probed? And then it automatically went off.
It was a. Okay.
It was booby trapped.
It was booby trapped. Yeah.
Whoa. I kind of missed that. I figured it was just some weird mixture of too much oxygen or
no, because just right before it blows up, he sees the data. He's like, wait a minute. And then it goes boom.
That makes more sense because, the timing of it would make sense that he booby trapped it. Wow.
So then this man who is the best of us then decides he's going to maroon the final two characters, Cooper and Anne Hathaway, on this ice planet and go up to the space station and somehow get home on his own.
Was he going home or was he going to go to the third planet?
He's going to go to the third planet.
Is that what he was? Oh, I missed that part. Okay.
Yeah.
all by himself. So he's been on this planet for at least 25 years, which I personally think that they should have cast somebody older. But
well, no, he went. He said he cryoslept a lot, and then and even the last time he didn't even set a wake up.
He was only there
time.
For like a year or two, and then he just cryoslept.
So wait, they don't age while they're sleeping?
No. Very, very slowly. They probably age a little bit, but I mean, otherwise, there's no reason to do it. You might as well stay awake and do math the whole time.
Except you go crazy.
Did you say math?
Well, yeah. Plus you need food.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I think
so. They did not explain the science behind the sleeping
cryosleep.
You're just sleeping in a big hot tub.
No, if you're because cryo means frozen, right? If you're frozen, you're definitely not aging at the same.
That
rate.
Water was warm.
They heat you up when they melt when they thaw you out.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
They didn't
we're all debating
it.
This stuff that's not actually mentioned.
They don't chip you out.
I don't know if they just keep your body warm, but that makes sense that they would thaw you out before you wake up. Okay, great. They just made that look so quick. Like they got there, they cryo see state. His little coffin, and they push a button and it opens with hot steam coming out. So I was
it's
like,
the future.
Okay, so Mr. Stupidhead.
Oh, wow. She's got feelings about
Matt him. Matt Damon. So stressful to me.
It's pretty stressful.
That whole planet scene. And then he gets in the ship and goes into space and tries to dock and blows himself up.
Right. Scott, and then Cooper almost dies because he's got a chip in his helmet, is able to get his comm back, gets rescued, and they're kind of chasing. They're right behind Matt Damon. And they're even sending a message. Don't try to dock. It's not going to work out. And does Mr. Stupidhead listen?
No, because he's the best of us.
He's literally not listening. He turned off.
So now he destroys. He does some damage to their
which leads to
station
with all the cool time travel and stuff. Leads to one of my favorite, maybe my favorite scene of the movie.
When the sound cuts out.
No, when he's docking with the spinning space station.
Oh yeah,
I love that scene.
What have to do with time travel?
Nothing. That's what I'm saying. It shouldn't be my favorite scene in a movie filled with time travel and cool.
No, it's a super cool scene
and cool things.
Why do you like it so much?
I don't know. It just
trying to spin at that same speed as that, it like G forces while trying to line it up and get.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things. It feeds to my inner like just action movie guy where it's just like, you know, there's no computer that can help him. It's just this one man has to get it spinning and get it docked. And well,
except
I guess
the Android did help actually.
As I forget. Yeah, Tars helped.
No,
a lot.
It's great. It's super suspenseful.
But it's just like, yeah, I can't help it. I get really tense.
Oh yeah, everybody. I guarantee you, everybody watching that part of the movie is like.
And Anne passes out, like the G forces knock her out.
Yeah.
And Coop's barely hanging.
Yeah, but the crazy thing is that's how it actually is in space. They're not spinning that fast like when they have to dock on the International Space Station, but that's what they would have to do.
Yeah.
If it was spinning, they'd have to line it up and then they'd have to go to match it.
And
then
slow it down.
Yeah. Once they attach.
Because I forget that they're not just like docking with home, like they're docking with the spaceship. And I always forget too, this time watching it, is that that's where all the embryos are too, like Plan B is on that ship, so that's not just more food and water, like that's the whole friggin' game right there.
Mr. Stupidhead,
seriously,
the movie is stressful. It reminds me of this film and Gravity.
Gravity is way more stressful. Gravity is literally stressful from start to finish.
This film has like three or four major stresses in it, but you know, you just by the end of the film they both deserve like a nice
this
weekend in the Caribbean.
Did Hans Zimmer do The Dark Knight Rises?
My guess is yeah. And probably Inception also.
Because he definitely did this one.
It's got that Nolan like slow humming style. Because
it is, yeah, from the beginning. And the TikTok on water planet.
We looked it up.
So brilliant. Oh, you looked it up?
Yeah,
so
did you look it up?
I heard somewhere that every tick is a year going by.
Oh.
So the soundtrack, you know, when they first get
there, every 1.5 seconds, there's a tick. It represents a year.
A year goes by on Earth. Yeah. And it's mainly just in the beginning of that scene.
Desmond's having a knowledge film time travel orgasm. Wow.
I still have that movie available on Amazon. I might go
watch that scene again.
You should watch the scene. If you look up Interstellar time ticking
water
sound,
planet.
Water Planet.
Oh, Water Planet.
There's a bunch of stuff about it.
It's amazing.
So brilliant.
You know, that tick kind of stops as the scene continues, but when they first get there, that tick is very, you know, apparent, and you're like, that's a year. Every time is a year, and it just makes that scene so much more intense. It's amazing.
I actually
thought it's a day, right?
Is it a day or a year?
It's got to be a day because then they're only 23 years. That'd be 23
Sorry,
ticks.
Sorry, a day.
It's
Sorry.
No way it ticks.
Yeah, yeah, it's a every
times.
Tick is
a
one
day.
Day.
Yeah.
The tick is 1.5 seconds. 1.5 seconds a day is passing.
Yeah. Sorry.
Talk about
Sorry.
Unique
a day.
Time travel.
That's so smart.
This film is so cool. So, smart. So great.
Okay, so where
Butthead's,
were we?
Butthead's dead.
So Butthead's dead. They got
They've
on the
docked.
Ship. The embryos are fine. It's just the two of them now.
So now.
But they have two robots with them. They have Tars and like
Kip.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the design of those robots later.
So they hatch a plan. Oh, that's
they
right.
They don't have enough fuel to go back home.
So they hatch a slingshot plan.
Yep. So they're going to use the gravity of Gargantua to slingshot the
space station
to the next planet. But in order to do that, they have to. So there's the space station and then there's the spaceships. There's two spaceships that attach.
There's like four of them.
Well, there's the landers and the spaceships.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
So I think it's Tars is in one of the spaceships and Cooper is in the other spaceship. And then Anne Hathaway is in
the main
space station area.
Yeah.
And so they have to, you know, fire the engines. So they got to get as close as they can to, you know, the black hole. So they're circling around it. That's what happens is you don't go straight into it. You circle around like
gravity.
Water. Like water down a drain. And so they get as close as they can, and then they have to fire their engines at a certain time and use their momentum to slingshot.
And then also drop off to drop weight. So they need to use the boost from these landers or spaceships.
And then drop
the
dead
weight. Get the energy and then drop the weight.
So when they say drop the weight, they are dropping the weight into the black hole.
Yes.
So Tars is going to go into the black hole and he's going to try and send data back for as long as he can so they can get as much data as they can. So they're doing that. That's their plan. They're going to do it. So they go, boom, they drop Tars and then they're boom, here's the second one. And then he's like, it's all you, girl. The survival of our species depends on you. And she's like, wait, what? And he drops into the black hole as well. And we get to follow Cooper into a black hole. Neat. Right?
Yeah.
And I have to say that they did a good job with this. Not that I know at all what it would look like, but I feel like they did a really great job.
You can take liberties because nobody knows and we've got to assume it bends your concept of time and space.
Can I say one thing? Do you,
you
look
could
like...
say it. Yeah, I don't even know where to begin. I just want to...
So the little bit of knowledge I do know about black holes is if you were to go down the drain of a black hole, there would come a point where you would start to be stretched out like spaghetti. So your head would be fine, but then your feet would be stretched and you'd get really stretched and long just because
like the, someone pinching your toe
and pulling you down. Infinity. Yes. Just like I showed you earlier. So, and you would break to pieces and die. So the only theoretical way that a person or a machine could make it past the event horizon, meaning the point where light doesn't escape, is if it were a giant, enormous, gargantuan black hole, because it's the same amount of gravity as like a regular black hole as it is to a giant, massive, you guys can't see me, but I am stretching my arms as wide as they
Ari's got long arms.
Go.
It's a decent amount of space.
And then that same amount of gravity being pulled. So there are theories out there that if we came across a big enough black hole, we could theoretically send something in and it could get down further past the event horizon than an average size black hole.
Now, is that because infinity is infinite? Like you can't go. So if your small black hole stretches to infinity and your giant black hole stretches to infinity, it's all just infinity.
Yeah. So the
amount of gravity is going to be the same.
Yeah,
regardless.
It's like taking this and pulling it that much and taking this and pulling it the same distance down. The distance from here to here is greater than the distance from here to here.
Yeah.
This is not making any sense to you guys.
No, it is. I'm actually picturing my EQ right now. And when I do EQs and you can like band your EQ wide or skinny and
I just hope to the listeners, it doesn't sound like we're going like this and like this and like this and like, you know, like.
Oh, this is getting the hint. They can research further on the interwebs.
Okay. I think, I'll check out especially Instagram, folks. I'll have some pictures of what Ari is just.
So I nerd out over this kind of stuff. This is like my.
Don't
this
tell
like
them
my,
you're a nerd, Ari.
Yeah, like
I think they know.
I'm a space
oh,
nerd,
man.
And then this kind of stuff is like, yee! It's like I get giddy over it.
Well,
so
I love that they just drop it kind of casually sometimes and kind of seriously sometimes, but they say the word gravity a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you want to learn about this, if you want to study it,
research
go
gravity.
Study gravity.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're basically leading you towards
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I mean, gravity is the cause of all the cause and the solution to all this movie. Okay. So
he's going in the black hole.
So he goes in the black hole and, you know, what they show is that it's dark, and then they show like the outside of the spaceship, and there's like sparks and like debris. I guess it's breaking off of the thing. And then he's in his spacesuit and his spaceship says eject. So he does. And then he's just kind of in blackness, like moving around like he's falling. And so he doesn't get stretched out like spaghetti. He makes it past, you know, to where it's all black. And then he falls into a tesseract.
Yeah, this is the first time I caught them actually saying the word tesseract. So
long story short, this was put there by something. They kind of bring that up again.
Yeah.
And that something or someone, Cooper realizes, is people, but way in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So people way in the future has figured out how to turn the fifth dimension being space-time into a physical, tangible, three-dimensional world that we currently
can understand and navigate.
Yes.
Now. Yeah.
And so he's in this world, right, that has multiple scenarios where all time is happening at once.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, you know, these very advanced beings put Coop behind the bookshelf of his daughter's room. And he realizes that, and he, you know.
The ghost.
He's the ghost.
So he starts to do all the same things that the ghost did by knocking books off. And he realizes gravity. You know, there's like these thin lines in the bookshelf and all around him that he can like move, but represent gravity.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like,
well, the dust is falling. So he can, that's why we have the dust in this movie. So you can see gravity.
Right. Well, this also harkens back, you know, earlier in the film, he talks to Anne Hathaway, can you go back in time? And she says, no, you can, you know, potential travel forward, whatever, but you can never go back in time. She said, gravity is the only thing that can go back. So even though he can play with time, he can't go there, but he can affect gravity.
Yeah, they say that you can go forward in different speeds, but you can't go back.
You can never go back.
And he, so at the beginning of the movie, the last message that young Murph decodes from her ghosts is stay.
Yeah, sorry, because
she mentioned earlier in the film, yeah.
Yeah, like
this reminded me so much of dreams. I don't know if you guys have recurring dreams ever or recurring scenarios in dreams, but do you guys ever lucid dream even to a small extent?
I don't.
I think I have a couple of times.
I've had a couple of seriously lucid dreams, and that is crazy. That'll melt your brain.
So just for people who don't know, lucid dreams are where you realize you are dreaming in your dream.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're able to.
Yeah.
You stay in the dream and you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently you can train your brain to do that.
And it usually happens. I've gone through times in my life where it happens a lot. And it happens usually when I'm waking up, and I get to the point where if it's happened night after night, I'm lucid enough to go, oh crap, this means I'm waking up. And so then I really try to run around and solve some dream problems, because I know if I'm lucid that I'm about ready to be forced to wake and my chance is done. But in semi-lucid, like I wouldn't call it lucid dreaming, but in scenarios, I'll kind of get repeat scenarios in my dream. And even though I'm not really controlling everything, I'm still trying to solve problems. Like these are usually more anxiety dreams. Those are what I kind of have as recurring dreams. But this reminded me of that so much, where you should try something different to solve the problem. Like, you know how it played out the first time and it didn't work. Like the first time, obviously he sent the message stay back. The message stay was relayed and it didn't work. He still left, but in his panic brain of not really knowing what he's doing, he's still just screaming stay, stay, stay. And it just made me think of being stuck in a dream where I'm like, I almost know like this didn't work, but I I only have so much time to solve this problem, so I'm just going to stick to the scenario that played out before just so I can at least relay some message. And I don't know, I just saw that that like panic in his brain where he's almost like, shit, I need to do something different, so I actually don't go, but things are happening so fast, I don't know what to do, so stay.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that I kind of like that. I feel like, knowing Christopher Nolan, like he probably did that kind of on purpose, like kind of blended a dream state with this black hole time travel state.
I mean, this, what you're talking about begs, I don't know, this is the time to bring it up, but it's time for the bootstrap paradox alert. Yeah.
I think so.
Because that's what's going on here. And just like Terminator, they're suggesting in the film that he leaves, and then he finds out that he was the one sending the gravity signals back, which sent him off in the first place. And then he's suggesting that in the future, civilization is helping create this wormhole so that all this can happen. And so essentially what they're saying is, this had to always happen this way.
Yeah.
This had to, or else the civilization in the future would not have made it without him talking to Murph and them getting off of Earth and all that.
Without him sending TARS through the black hole to get the math.
Without him, without everything happening exactly what's happening, there would be no civilization in the future that would send back this created wormhole to help them happen. So this is bootstrap paradox. So in terms of what you're saying of like, yes, why didn't you do anything different? Because this is how it's always had to have been.
Which
is my
believes
jam,
on a universal scale.
Yeah, there's no way, there was no first time that they did this and then they figured it out. And then it always had to happen that way for civilization to exist.
Oh, I thought Ari was furrowing her brow.
What, I had a brief moment of...
Ari isn't always about the what's happened has happened has always happened.
But in this case of the movie...
Well, no, you're correct. I just had a brief moment of, is that actually the bootstrap or is that just a loop?
Or is it just a loop?
I mean, they also, I think, are one and the same. We haven't had a bootstrap movie in a while. So.
I feel like bootstrap is usually, I think this is bootstrap.
It is a
loop, like,
right? Isn't it always a loop? Isn't that still, it's like they did this, like he sent the directions of the time machine to how they made it and stuff. But then it just, it's always happened that way. It is a loop. And it's also
right,
a paradox.
Right, you can't find the beginning of it.
Well, and I feel like bootstrap is characterized as information-based, like without sending the information back. Like loops can just be like a,
yeah,
a,
so it is
a
your
groundhog
right.
day where you're just trapped in a weird circle and nothing makes sense. Whereas this is, he needed the information to send the information back, to get the information in the future.
Yeah, even when he's going through the black hole in the end, you even find out there's a moment when they first took off through the wormhole and Anne Hathaway puts her hand up to the window and she feels like a touch from something and she's like, oh, that's them. And that ends up being Matthew McConaughey too, that he's half of the they. The first time I saw this film, I still thought like when he went to the Tesseract, like, oh, this is like a spiritual thing. He's going through time and space. But now that I watch it, it is more clear that they're saying, no, this is something that was set up by a higher civilization that doesn't see time like we do and can navigate it. And they made it more understandable for him.
And that higher civilization is us.
Is us. And they talked about how they can view time differently. They talked about
fifth dimension, right?
The fifth dimension, how they can view time as if to go into the past, you would climb down a canyon, and to go to the future, you would climb up a mountain. But the thing to remember is you can observe time. So you observe time differently by climbing down into this mountain to look and see, like he was looking through behind right. the bookshelf, what had happened. But he can't go there.
Right.
He cannot go into the past, climb through the bookshelf, and be there in the past, right? It's because time travel to the past is not possible. But they can view it, and they can affect the gravity. That's this whole movie's...
How does he... And I'm not, I haven't questioned this until now, but how is he blessed with the abilities to affect gravity?
So I think what they are trying to say is gravity is like God in science. So gravity controls and has created and destroyed everything. Gravity created the first mass. And the bigger the mass, the more gravity around it. So...
Gravity makes time. We're
gravity
finding out.
Affects time.
It is.
So gravity is
gravity
God.
Is like
gravity
sixth
is everything.
Dimension.
Yeah. And because of gravity, you know, if you go back to the theory that you love so much, that time is happening, all everything
My name's
is
God. I love time.
No, his favorite thing is that all time
Not
is
my
happening.
Favorite thing. It's just how it goes, guys.
It's not your favorite thing?
No, I'm just, it's how it exists.
It's a theory that he really likes. He thinks that all time is happening all at the same time.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew about the, like, this has all happened before and it'll all happen.
Well, that's another one.
Well, I fuse them together because otherwise you're thinking a loop is still linear. Like, oh, it's in this part now and it's go around. I just think all the times are always happening.
It's all
time is happening all at the same time. So if you take that and then apply it to, you know, this fifth or sixth dimension that they can see, where if you climb down a valley into the past, because mm-hmm. it's all happening at the same time, yeah. you can then climb up this top of the mountain to see what's happening in the future. And gravity runs from the top of that mountain to the bottom of that well, or whatever you want to call it, like a straight line. Like the lines, you know, yeah. behind the bookshelf, those lines will run everywhere like that grid where you pinch and pull, exactly. And so because of that, it's like taking that pinch and pulling it instead of pinch and pull, which requires a lot of energy. You take that little line and you just go boop.
But how does he have the ability? Is he just become one with, is it because it's the way the Tesseract is created?
It's because.
Because normally.
Well, because remember, and this is the first time I picked up on this. They built
the Tesseract.
Okay. I don't remember that in any previous.
So again,
iterations.
It has always happened this way.
Like a being like a higher level being could build it like you would build a bookshelf.
Yeah.
They could build a time.
Yeah. So in the future, these beings that we become are able to
navigate,
make
time.
Something to where you can see gravity like these grids, like these right. lines. They built it. So they put it there.
So let's.
So anyway, to finish up, so he, we all said that, right? He gives the binary code. He gives all the data.
He gives Morse code.
He gives, right, through Morse code, he gives all the data that the android had found in the black hole,
yeah.
which helps Murph solve the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So whatever that equation that they needed to somehow get the space station into space and save the human race with plan A.
Yay.
Okay, so.
And then he passes out.
So then he did it, right? He gives her, it's the second hand of the watch that he gave her was flickering, and it had always been flickering, but we didn't see that until the end of the movie where he moves gravity and flicks it.
It doesn't at the very beginning when he gives it to her, does it?
Yeah, she.
It
was noticed at one
not
point.
Not when he first gives it to her after she throws it. Because that's the point where he like said stay.
Yes.
And then he started to do the flickering thing.
That's right.
So it was always happening, just like how Scott said. So after he gives her the code, it starts to shut down. The Tesseract starts to fold in on itself until he's in blackness again and gets spit out. Now here's my question. Spit out. Period. He got spit out into the future. Now, mind you, going into this black hole, they said would cost them 51 years or something like that because of time. Right?
Just that one part just was 51 on its own. Right?
Yeah, just getting.
Oh, just even if everything went perfectly as planned.
If you want to add it up, their entire experience, I think it was 2 years plus the 23, it's 25 plus the 51. Right. So I think we're talking about like 71 years at least.
Yeah, give or take.
Well, she comes out. She's 124.
And well, she was probably, well, I mean, you can do the math. I'm sure someone has.
Yeah.
You know, by the time she sends the message, like, did you know?
Well, that... yeah. Then he went through the black hole. So whatever that took out of him.
So, but he gets spit out and they're not clear about this. He just gets spit out into space in his spacesuit near Saturn.
Near where the wormhole was.
Near the wormhole, maybe through the wormhole. And it's within enough time to where the new space station that they got off of the planet with the equation was. And they were able to pick him up just in time before he ran out of oxygen. You got to put a little bow on it. I mean, it makes sense.
Well,
if,
no, the people in the future set that up.
Yeah.
To hook him up.
I mean, if you can, you know, if you can control gravity.
He's been through a lot.
So he makes it through. They scoop him up and they say your daughter is still alive. She's 100 and whatever, 3 or something. And then there's the just sweetest scene that always makes me cry. I'm gonna cry right now just thinking about it. Of him seeing his daughter when she's 103.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a paradox. It's like you said, it's scientifically possible, but isn't also like bootstrap paradox is possible. But it's just the paradox of that you are younger than your daughter. And it's a way that is not a form of a paradox.
Not if you make
I know
a
that it's
trip
explainable,
it near a black hole.
But just based on our understanding of time, you're there with your daughter who is now 60 years older than you or whatever. What a unique scene. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
If he went back in time and had sex with his grandmother.
Check out our episode of Predestination.
So let me play in this sandbox for a second, just because I think we have to live in Scott's world.
Welcome.
In nice. This one. But I might not even be able to get this question out. I think we just have to live in Scott's world. I always like to try to imagine the first time and what happened.
Okay. If there was a first time.
At what point did they decide to send this? At what point in the future did we succeed to a point that we decided it was better to send this information back?
If there was no wormhole, they wouldn't have sent the first crew out. They wouldn't have sent the second crew, or they would have just went out there and died. And that's it. Civilization would be history without the wormhole that's artificially created.
Yeah.
So welcome to my world.
I guess so.
It has to have always been this way. They didn't get the wormhole or the tesseract without the help from future them. Future them doesn't exist without the wormhole or tesseract.
You could, you could bring in the idea that maybe it's not us from the future and that it's an alien species.
He believes it's them, but that's not confirmed.
Far as us goes, I think, with all of these particles floating infinitely in space, there's infinite possibilities. There's a possibility that another we popped up on more than one planet.
Yeah. So an alien.
So there's aliens. Possible that there is a we in another galaxy.
Yeah.
Just
intelligent life.
Yeah.
Another intelligent life.
Or anything. And let's say you're right.
Well,
say
because
in
when
the first
Mars,
one we died.
When we ruined Mars and we sent our pods of Plan B off Mars to different space times, and one of them landed on Earth and we mixed in the primordial goo and came here. You don't buy that?
Wait, what?
there's part of me, there's a small part of me that believes this has all happened before on Mars and we already ruined that planet. And just before all humanity was destroyed, we launched some probes off of Mars to other planets in hopes that we would grow from our DNA
tardigrades.
Yeah.
I believe we're all descendants of tardigrades. Do you know what tardigrades are?
Yeah. They live in space, right?
They can survive in space. They don't live there, but they can survive.
Yeah. That's right. They go into kind of a stasis, don't they? And then when they land on another habitable planet, they blossom.
It could be that there's aliens. We died. They can see time and space. They see alternate realities. Say, oh, if we go back, we can put a wormhole there and then they can live and then we can eat their brains or whatever, So that's
a thing. Hey, Scott, do you know what we are to those other civilizations?
Meat.
Aliens.
Yeah.
I think it was the Vulcans.
I did look up in this article. It says, that NASA stated the only time that you could either time travel, right, if you go in the speed of light, or if you create a wormhole between points in space-time, except they said the technology needed to create a wormhole is far beyond anything we have today. So it's almost like right out of this is what the movie created, right? Some technology, someone that could create a wormhole, and that being the only way to time travel. We didn't wrap up the ending yet fully, right?
So he meets his daughter. She's essentially dying right then and there, and she says no parent should have to see their children die, so go away so I can die. He leaves. She's surrounded by her family, and she says she talks about love, go find Anne Hathaway's character on a planet who she's there all by herself, because that's the planet, that's the one that we have to go to, go find her. And they show her on that planet, and she's got her helmet off and she's breathing, and it's
that's right.
And so he gets in a spaceship and he goes.
He steals the spaceship.
Yeah.
He doesn't even know this technology yet. He's like, yeah, I can fly it. It's fine. But yeah, he's up on a spaceship and it's a whole civilization. They show like a baseball field, but like the hill's like rolling up because it's a cylinder space station. Mm-hmm. And it's actually named like Cooper or Cooper Station, which he thinks it's about him, but it's about his daughter who got them off the Earth with his help. It all comes full circle, doesn't it?
It does.
Loop.
It does.
Loop. This episode was sponsored by Loops. Thanks for having us. We saved time.
Holy crap.
So it's funny. We said specifically, I'm not going to go through the full plot. We'll just do it. And you did it.
I just love
so many
things.
It feels like 3 hours later.
This was a good way to do this movie. I think going through this movie slowly and having our digressions as they popped up.
So gravity is all. It's the only
gravity is God, and love is, I don't know, How would you explain love?
It's the unexplainable.
Love is the fifth dimension.
And yeah. Love is the fifth dimension?
Love is the fifth dimension.
But love yeah. is the anchor between dimensions.
You know what love doesn't have? You know what love is not affected by?
Gravity.
God, I love
you. No, but it did. It dragged him to it. Well, with the help of the Tesseract.
No. I'm looking at my other notes here.
They talk about how, you know, it's just a feeling. It's, you know, one of my favorite quotes that some scientist says, I can't remember who it is right now, is that we are the universe experiencing itself as human for a little while. We are the universe experiencing itself consciously for a little while. You know, we're made up of stardust and we can scientifically explain so many things now. Atoms and evolution and space and gravity and quantum physics and, you know, but why are you drawn to a person? Why do you still love someone after they're dead? You know, there is the, you know, something that is unexplainable. And as cheesy as the word is, I wish there was a better word for it. Yeah. Love is all we have right now to call it.
Yeah. It's our connection to.
Yeah, like how people don't die until the person they love says it's okay to go, or right after their lover goes, they die shortly after. And
why would
kind of unexplain things?
Why would the people who created the matrix that we live in code us to love?
keeps us distracted, occupied, content, and not questioning the fabric of our reality.
I'll buy that. Thank you for listening to Time Pop, brought to you by Sounds Awesome. Please like and subscribe and tell a neighbor or friend about it so you can share a discussion of your own on the topic of Interstellar. Thank you for sticking with us through this longest episode thus far. I think between how great the movie is and the conversation it sparked, I think it's a great long episode. Thank you for hanging in there. Stay tuned to social media for ongoing info and a heads up on what film is coming up in case you would like to watch along. You can find us at What Sounds Awesome on Facebook and Instagram and at Sounds Awesome 2 on Twitter. And also check out our Time Pop specific feeds at TPOP9216. Ari and Dez will be back in 2 weeks with a new Time Pop, but if you would enjoy another fun film discussion, tune into Rotten Popcorn next Wednesday, starring Scott, as featured on this episode of Time Pop, and Dez. On Rotten Popcorn, we discuss movies with a vast difference between fans and critics based on Rotten Tomatoes ratings. It brings a lot of different types of movies to our doorstep, and I, for one, am enjoying watching these movies under a different light. Next week, we will be discussing the series launching movie Step Up, so check that out. And please, this week, we are launching All the Answers on the Sounds Awesome Network. That should be out by Saturday. Please tune into, just keep your eye on whatsoundsawesome.com. It will be there. It will also be on Apple Podcasts, CastBox, Spotify, and wherever you're finding this podcast, you will find All the Answers. We were pretty close to launch anyways, but right now, with what's going on in the world, these episodes are very timely, and they will sound very weird if they come out in a couple of months. So we are not only are we launching it now, but we're also launching. We're going to do the first episode first because it really sets the pace for the podcast, but then we're going to jump right to episode 6 and 7 and get those out to you so they will make sense in what we're doing. So we're probably going to launch those 3 episodes simultaneously by Saturday. So enjoy those, and then we will continue to release them fairly quickly just to make sure we're all on the same page again. So, you know, these podcasts have, they make sense here and now. And yeah, and stay tuned to All Answers Pod. That's at All Answers Pod on your Facebook and Twitter. And like I said, just if you pay attention to Sounds Awesome, you will have all the information you need. But please pay attention to their specific feeds too, because during the episodes or right before they record some episodes, a lot of times they'll put something out asking you guys for questions, and you can really help drive the episode and maybe get some of your bigger questions answered. It is All the Answers Podcast. So enjoy that. Enjoy everything we else got coming. Also, it may be on this feed. I'll probably put it out on this feed, but I may also do its own feed. Again, because of what we're going through, it's sparking a lot of ideas and thoughts. We're going to do an apocalypse movie podcast. I say that word apocalypse kind of like that because we're using that term very liberally and we're watching movies that may have to do with what we're going through right now. For the most part, they're going to have to do with the human experience going through crazy times, you know, when a lot of things are put on us and we just have to survive. So that podcast is going to be called Apocalypse Now. So we just recorded our first episode on Outbreak last night. Those are going to be a little bit different. They're going to be a little less edited, I guess, is what I'm getting at, because I think having them be a little grittier goes well with that theme. So pay attention to this feed and the Rotten Popcorn feed. I'll probably put them out on there to launch them. And then I may just leave them on here since these are my movie shows right now, or I may start an official Apocalypse Now podcast feed. We will see. Callum Grant is going to be a regular person on that. We were kind of just looking for a guest just to throw on here and all that stuff. But the first episode went so well with Scott, I, and Callum. Ari may make an appearance. Some All the Answers people may make an appearance. Some people you've never heard of may make an appearance. But I think Callum is going to be a regular piece of that show. Our first conversation went so well that I would like to see him back so Scott, he, and I can continue what we've started on that show. So enjoy the rest of Interstellar, and we will see you soon on a lot of stuff. Thank you for listening to the Sounds Awesome Network. Let's play in this world for a little bit longer. I'm just going to make this simple. Light speed, light travel exists. You can go away from Earth for a while traveling light speed, and then you can travel light speed on your way back to Earth, and you will be here. You will age, we'll just say 10 years. I'm just going to make it up. You're 10 years older, and everyone on Earth is 100 years. 100 years has passed. Do you do it?
So you've aged 10 years, and everyone else has aged 100 years.
Yeah. So basically, I always like to use the, when you're having a shit day and you just want, you know, you're just not sure what it's all about. I always like to say, you know what? In 100 years, all new people.
Jesus. Wow. Fresh start.
In 100 years. Everyone that's here is gone.
Quick little side question. Have you been watching Altered Carbon?
Kelly has been. Okay. I've watched a couple episodes.
Okay.
But let's just for the questions being, because I think the hardest part about this question is leaving your loved ones behind. So let's just say the spaceship is big enough to take
your loved ones.
Take your close ones with. Yeah.
You then yes. Okay. Absolutely.
I don't. Okay.
I mean, all your, you know, where does that throw your acquaintances?
But that's not everybody. Like your close family. Like, let's say
you can bring a few besties and a lover.
Let's call it a baker's dozen. Just to.
It's a tie. Because look, you come back 100 years later, you are out of sorts. That's not even something that, like, you come back 20 years later, you can catch up and figure out the technologies and stuff, how to use a cell phone, whatever. 100 years later, you're just almost maybe, there's a whole different mind shift. It's going to be very hard to catch up. Yeah, you'll just be like, what, you know, in terms of how you make money, getting along with other people.
First of all, you'd be famous.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure they'd be taking care of you, hopefully, depending on the state of the world.
Well, right now, you'd be an anomaly. In 100 years, you'd just be another time-traveling asshole.
I want to make a movie called
Time Travel. Well, you might be the first, but when you come back in 100 years, everyone's doing it. I mean, I'm not saying that's for sure, but as Scott
says,
that's
your scenario.
Like, you can't even, like, I mean, imagine in 1920 and then you go away for 10 years and then you come back and there's cell phones and Teslas.
So I would absolutely do it because, you know, we all know I'm a futurist and I would love to be able to see what the future looks like in 100 years.
That's a big jump, too. Like, I think if I make it, you know, 25 years, you don't even question it.
Yeah. When it gets 100, it's tough.
That's
like we learned from Matt Damon. He went out there to see the pretty lights. And once he didn't have human contact, he went nuts. And like, you know, while we are here on this planet experiencing this consciousness, like, this is the ride we're on to go to the future and come back. And like that rest of that ride of this one, you're kind of fucked because you've seen this kind of amazing space. And now you're just, and you don't get along with anybody. I don't know. I might not do it. Not for the 100 years.
I'd do it just for the 10-year vacation. I wouldn't take anyone with me. I just want to go. I just want to go sit in it. Can you make up my spaceship to look like a cheap motel room with
endless HBO? DVD supplies?
Oh, no. Just HBO.
All right, well, here's another question.
And not even HBO Go. Just whatever's playing live.
Just Interstellar over and over.
Oh, boy. So here's another question. The method in which they used to alter the past, moving gravity, would you use it? So you can't go into the past physically, but you can observe from a distance and you can alter gravity.
But it's not many people would get what you're throwing down.
I was just going to say, I think you go mad because I think I'm trying to figure out how you would.
If you don't have a Murph who gets Morse code, how else can you communicate through your gravity?
Maybe you don't have to communicate with somebody. Maybe you just shift gravity, you know, over 5 feet and it creates a disaster that prevents
He made a book fall, right?
Yeah.
So he could go back and alter the bullet so that Kennedy doesn't get shot.
Yeah, stuff like that.
So is this bookshelf forever growing? Because I'm just thinking, let's say you're trying to get a message to her at a certain point and she doesn't get it. She leaves the room. Are you able to go down two levels and start that scenario over?
I guess.
Yeah, you had different little patches of...
All time is happening all at the same time.
Thank you.
Everything is happening all at the same time.
Because if they built it, that means all they built was this bookshelf. It's not like anyone can go anywhere. This was built for this one man at this one time.
Mm-hmm. To ensure the survival of this
because
species.
Because it already happened and they have to make sure it constantly happens. It's like the Terminator, except
well,
that
I
wasn't
guess
an outside.
If all time is happening, if everything is happening all the time, is it then considered a loop or a bootstrap?
If it's always happening the same way. I see what you're saying.
They in the future build the bookshelf for his present.
They can navigate through time. They see time as a whole different thing than we do.
So that means
they made the Tesseract for him to make it understandable.
That's right. Because they've been to the center of the black hole. They know what the math is. Does life even matter at that point?
It's pretty far future for that. That's like a next evolution.
You're living in the fifth dimension,
you're a different kind of being.
Like you are just a beam of light at
but
that
if
point.
Your origin, you know, was
humanity,
humans, you need to ensure that they survive so they can evolve to become whatever the heck you are.
But the whole point of being human is that you're having that experience. If
it's an evolution,
if you turn the experience, your human experience into infinity, doesn't this whole experiment lose its meaning?
Wait, what? You're turning what into infinity?
We don't know if they're infinite.
What's infinite?
The us in the future,
if these new beings we become.
If it's a being of like light or something.
If they can function in the fifth dimension.
I look at it as they have to build something like the Tesseract. Am I saying that right?
Tesseract.
I like how you say it. I like a Tesseract.
In order for them to manipulate time, uh-huh. In order for them to see it happening, everything happening all at once, they have to build this thing. They have to build something and go into it. So it's not just like they all the time, all around them, everything is happening all at the same time. I perceived it as they have to build this thing in order to go into it to in a very specific location, right? It was just her bookshelf. They built it for him. That very specific way.
Yeah.
And I took it as for them as well. In order to do that, they'd have to build it for themselves. But that's just me. Is that what you're getting as? Because
kind of. I'm in a weird space right now. Because if you can build it, then you can go there. And if you can go there, if you can enter and exit the fifth dimension at will, which you would have to in order to build this bookshelf, you would have to be able to exist in that fifth dimension for at least a certain amount of time. Then, I mean, I would imagine that once you break into that fifth dimension, it's not something you just go in and go out of. It's like,
it's a big deal.
It's like gravity. Like, it's not like we can just be like, yeah, I don't feel like hanging out with gravity today.
Yeah, I mean, it might require going into a black hole in order to get into it.
Yeah.
It might be a very big deal, you know, and
so to come back to my half just since I posed the question, I'm gonna force you guys to answer it. Does existing matter if you don't die?
Makes me
like
think
the whole of, point yeah. of this. I feel like the whole point of the experiment of being a human is that
correct. Right.
It's timed.
Does existing matter if you don't die?
Yes. Right. If you're always a constant.
So you still have consciousness.
Yeah.
And you still have experiences for that consciousness to.
In this physical space, like you're Ari.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
And you don't die. Yeah. That's a great question.
Because I feel like if there is a fifth dimension, sixth dimension, this isn't necessarily going along with the movie, that it's not of this tactile experience that we're on. And so if you're giving up that fifth dimension for a ride in this body, does it lose its meaning if it doesn't end? Because I'm just wondering, let's say yeah. like these beings we've gone in the black hole, we've solved the mystery, the fifth dimension has been exposed. Again, I don't think that's something you just turn on and turn off. You know, it's like gravity. Like once gravity exists, you're stuck with it. So now you don't die, basically. Or you don't. The living and dying is the same thing. You're a beam of light, whether you're a beam of light in Ari or you're a beam of light in heaven.
Something else, yeah.
Yeah. Does this lose its meaning?
I mean, I'm assuming if you're a beam of light, you don't worry about meaning. You're not. So, yeah,
but you would
not
want to, but
when
consciousness, but wouldn't
you
want about. Meaning? Like, isn't that?
You're not.
That's what I think being a human is. A lot of times,
yeah,
you are a beam of light, and you're like, you know what? I want to go ride a roller coaster. I'm gonna go ride Dez for 80 years, and then I'll get off that roller coaster, and I'll come back to being a beam of light.
Yeah, but while you're a beam of light, you're not a human, so having a human experience isn't something that you're even aware of or have consciousness about. I mean, I don't know. I don't fully understand your question, so I'm just trying to.
I get it. I mean, yeah, I think, yes, I think it would change the meaning greatly.
Yeah, I do too. I think, yeah, I would like to imagine that there's another dimension that we're, you know.
You mean like souls?
Kind of. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, we don't, this is just like time travel. Like we don't know what the answer is beyond this crude matter. Yeah. And I'm just imagining like that if we outsmart ourselves and enter that fifth dimension of beams of light, does all of this lose its.
If you are a universe, if you are like an all, you're just a universe. You're just like an all big blob of energy and gravity. You are just that. You don't, but then you form this human form and you appreciate like the feeling of a raindrop on your forehead, and that's experience and feeling. And you don't have that if you are everything.
It's like the quote, you are the universe experiencing itself as a human for a little while.
Right. It's tying into what she said. Right. Totally. So then we separate.
Did she say that in the movie?
No, that's a quote from, so it was Carl Sagan who said that quote.
Okay. Did you nail it?
Do you think the future versions of us set this up so we can make this podcast to perpetuate time? Hello?
Well, see, this is, I'm answering my infinite question. Like, what happened the first time? You know, in the iterations after this, Ari isn't going to be struggling to find this quote. It's just going to be a flawless boom, boom, boom.
But this is the free will thing that we've debated, right? You've gone through all the stimuli and all your other versions of this existence. There's no reason why you would ever do something different. Every instinct you have is based on all the stimuli, which has always been the same. You always make the same decision.
Okay, well, and some people say that it's Alan Watts as well who said that quote. And it just says, you are the universe experiencing itself. But I've read it differently before.
I like your version better. In the first version, she didn't do this, but in the second version, she did. Again, everything in her life up to this moment has always been the same. It's always the same stimuli. It's the same her. There's no reason to suggest she would make a different decision.
And you know what? Before love, I would try to change some stuff. But to be here now with Kelly and Will and Cormac and you two, I would make sure that I did everything perfectly to make sure that I would not be here now.
You are the universe experiencing itself as human for a little while.
I am Desmond McNeese.
I'm Ariel Gala.
And Scott Lifton.
We'll see. You'll hear us next time. Bye. Is that right?
Scott, you and I are not parts of the same hole.
We're parts of the same hole.